Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to a very special Mini Mart edition of the Corner Store.
Oh, you're going
to
rock with that now. Okay.
I like it. What do you
I'm
think?
I'm not mad.
No,
because I came up with it.
You did. I know. I mean, like many great things, Tara Mahadevan, you two have coined another phrase.
Oh, there you go.
We have an incredible guest in the Mini Mart. This is a young man from the South Side of Chicago, Hyde Park, represent someone who is put on for the culture, both in terms of the bars he puts into the world and also as an artist educator. His new project is downloadable, streamable on all platforms. Nappy Talk,
Everywhere.
The author of the rapper behind the incredible project Nappy Talk, Matt Muse, is in the Mini Mart and the Corner Store tonight. Matt Muse, welcome, man.
Wow. Hey.
Could you do the rap horn again? Yeah.
So you're saying rap horn.
Rap horn. What did you think?
Oh.
What did you think she was saying?
I thought she was saying rap porn. I was like, what?
Rap porn.
I was so confused.
Not sure what that is.
Yeah, actually, I know what it is. It's Tretch. Anyway, the point is that...
we
Matt
got gifts.
Muse, welcome, man. We got gifts.
Oh, yeah.
Out the gate.
I like gifts.
Here we go, man. So, here we go. We got some Flaming Hot Crunchy Cheetos for you.
Wow, the one hand.
I also, man, we have we got a Star Crunch, a little Debbie Star Crunch.
Okay, that works.
Oh, that's sexy.
That works.
And we have some ginger ale
for
you too,
and
man.
The ginger ale.
Yeah, the ginger ale for you.
Because your favorite.
That cool, refreshing drink.
Mick Jenkins.
Oh.
You know, the ginger ale references.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, yeah. No,
y'all
I know.
Slow.
No, I caught it. I caught it. I just, we're
You're
talking
slow
about
slow, and he's your favorite. Please.
Wow.
I know Matt News too
shook.
Well.
You do. Okay. I'm glad we're all family
and he's
here.
He's like laughing with his face in his hand because he knows how correct I am.
Mick Jenkins is great. Yeah.
Well, I know. Matt Muse, we were talking earlier. You put us on to a new game. Maybe we could play very quickly in the Mini Mart.
Oh, yeah.
Not the top five dead or alive.
Oh.
The Mount Rushmore.
Yeah. Your personal hip hop Mount Rushmore.
Right. And so, Matt Muse, who would you carve into the side of the mountain?
Four, right?
And four. Yeah. And also, I think also we
but
want
we
to
could have
acknowledge
like our
that
fifth. We could have like a young fifth.
That is like the top like, five.
Yeah.
You know, honorary.
It's the same thing.
Honorary. Like the,
yeah, because it has to be
we,
top five.
We
okay,
can do
fine. Top
want.
Four. Whatever.
Mount Rushmore. I mean,
in no particular order.
No, I need left to right. Okay.
Left to right.
Yes.
So it's left most nice. Important?
No, I don't know. I'm just
right.
kidding.
I go right to left because I read Hebrew.
So all right.
That's a bar. We got Lil Wayne. Lil Wayne is on there.
Okay.
Yeah. Kanye West is on there. Jay-Z. And like those guys are like kind of the roots to my hip hop experience. But then I would throw Kendrick in there because I think of the modern people who are doing it, he's been the most influential and impactful and just like, yeah. And if I had to throw a fifth.
Which I don't know if you could do a Mount Rushmore, but sure. I mean, why not?
I mean,
for the sake of
I guess
just
the, like
now we're playing a different
fine,
game.
Fine, we don't have to.
No, yeah, I think four. I think
you
we can
stick
do
with four.
Yeah,
it's fine.
Yeah, what's your four? Mount Rushmore. You know what it is. So
Bars. Look, oh my goodness.
Okay, Kevin.
Matt, I'm very excited. Matt Muse is in building. Matt, tell us. I guess you know kind of how you began. You know, becoming an MC. How did that start
Ooh,
for you?
It's a good question. It started with listening to hip hop. My dad. Makes house music. He's been making house music since I was born.
But I did not know that.
Yeah.
I feel like you have told me that, but I don't.
It. Yeah. He
remember.
Also was in a rap group too. And so he was playing hip hop all the time in the crib when I was growing up. A lot of Busta Rhymes. He loved Busta Rhymes. A lot of Redman and Method Man, Wu-Tang. And then when I graduated from eighth grade, he bought me a drum machine. And so I started making beats and stuff when I was in high school. And I was like writing raps to him, but I was too shy and nervous to like let people hear him. So I had like 700 beats and a whole bunch of raps.
But you were showing people your beats?
No, showing nobody nothing.
Oh.
No, they were just in the crib. Then when I got to college, it was like, take that back. The summer before I went to college, I went to U-Media for the first and only time I ever went for the open mic that was there with Brother Mike.
Lyricist Loft.
Lyricist Loft. There we go. I've only been once. So, yeah.
That's what it is, right?
Yeah, what it's called. Oh, yeah. But I talked to, and I have signed a list, and he called my name, and I was like, no, I'm too scared to perform. And he, like, gave me this illustrious speech. Like, yo, just go do it.
Brother Mike did.
And you didn't even know him that well, right?
Didn't know him at all. And he was like, just do it. And it was like a 5-minute long rap to start it up by Kanye West. And I did it. And then it was like, oh, you know, maybe I can do this. So start rapping in college. And the rest was kind of history. Like, college was really like the launch pad for me to really get into being an MC.
And you went to NIU.
Yeah, Northern Illinois.
And so what does that mean? It was the launch. I mean, when I think of NIU, I don't necessarily think of like the bastion of.
I mean, I can't envision. Where is NIU?
It's in Corn. Just think about cornfields surrounding DeKalb. A college. It's in DeKalb.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So it's Northern Illinois
University.
Yeah. It's near the border of another state, I imagine.
I don't know.
What is north of
us?
I don't think it's
that
close.
We're pretty far north in Chicago. But
we are.
But it's like, what, an hour and a half away?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's towards the west. North, right? Northwest.
Yep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So kind of.
How was that a launch pad?
Yeah.
Yeah. So basically, Northern Illinois is a PWI. Predominantly white institution.
Okay.
So that means that the black people band together and we were like, yo, these folks don't really care much about us. So we gonna make them care and we're gonna do all of these cool black things here. So there's every majority of the black community there was from Chicago. So obviously there was a huge music scene and huge like hip hop scene, a lot of rappers there. And it had a nice like group of rappers that would do things. And we had our own events and they were like campus rappers that would like perform at the events. And I was like, I want to be a campus rapper. And so
is that like a title?
No, I just made it up.
But, oh, okay.
But it does remind me of like what used to be kind of a like the local rapper.
Yeah, literally. Yeah.
Literally just rapper like that. Became just like the local. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Just like
oh,
that.
So you're like the person who played at like every show.
Literally.
Or somebody like, would come through
I played
town
hundreds of shows when I was in.
Because they would call on you to like open.
Really
yeah.
Good performer.
Exactly. Thank
yeah.
you.
Yeah. Yeah. And I guess that's where you got the chops.
Literally.
Yeah.
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 So like X number of people would come through town. Mm-hmm. Like who were some of the early
oh,
shows?
So you would like open
J. Cole,
for people.
Right, 2 Chainz right. came through, Drake.
And you opened for
I don't no.
Damn, Drake.
I wish.
Okay.
I wish. But they all like at the time when they were coming through, I hadn't had my name up there yet. But
oh,
like
okay. So
the end
who
of
did
my,
you open for?
I don't know. I'm trying to think. Maybe nobody famous. No. Because at the end of my career, it was like, not career, my college career, it was like, yo, they weren't letting, this is some other stuff that has nothing to do with hip hop, but they weren't letting like black artists come through our school no more because it just got really bad. But when they had huge events, though, that the school threw, I was the go-to,
you were the okay. campus rapper.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
was there like a, y'all got a squad or like organization? Or
yeah, there something? Was an organization. It was called Expression.
Okay.
It was very similar to Wordplay.
Oh, right. And you were one of the architects of this organization,
yeah.
or you were involved in the leadership of the organization?
Very much so. Yeah. I was the president when I was in college.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
and y'all, like, formed it, or was there before you?
It was formed right before I got there. But okay. So I was a part of, like, the second wave of folks who were a part of it. But, it like, we had an open mic every Tuesday, 200-plus people in there every week.
Wow.
And it was, like, the thing for, like, artists on campus.
And is it, like, all black people? Like, every single black person that goes to school would
basically
go?
It was like yeah it was busting and I mean it was other races in there too but it
yeah,
was like
predominantly
but yeah. this is in a lot of ways I think an interesting story about Midwest liberal arts schools that mm-hmm. are PWIs is that really the campus culture, which is no surprise, is determined and ran by that isolated crew
yes.
of
absolutely
black students.
Mm-hmm. So is PWI though like a informal phrase?
It's a fact, predominantly okay. white. It's literally if there's majority white folks, that's.
I also think it's like a phrase that counters like HBCUs.
Yes,
you know
exactly. It's like the opposite of that.
Yeah,
yeah.
But that because that is like every college I'm ever in the Midwest mm-hmm. has that squad mm-hmm. of either all black or oftentimes like a multiracial crew
yes.
of. Young people of color who afterwards like, can we talk about what's really
what's
happening
going on in
yeah,
school?
Yeah,
no,
exactly.
Like that's super real.
Yeah,
yeah.
So you found a community mm-hmm. on that campus.
Yep.
And they were encouraging of your desire to become a rapper.
Yeah, very much so.
Okay,
like super, super, super encouraging.
Because
like,
to this day, that is some of who comprises your crew.
Yep.
Right.
To this day, literally.
Right.
Yeah, and I mean, and even like. The people who were listening and supporting are still supporting and listening to this day, plus a lot more. But it started with those people at Northern Illinois.
When did you start taking it seriously?
When I was on Sway in the Morning.
What was that?
Speak on that.
Yeah.
A lot of times people will take it seriously before they get on Sway. But
right.
Yeah, how did that happen?
I mean, it was like, I would say I took myself seriously. prior to that.
Yeah.
Like, I believed in myself, but I think that, so basically the summer of 2015, he was in Chicago for an event. I performed my song, a song I have called Mike Brown, at the event, and he heard it. And he was like, yo, this is insane. I want to play it on the show. And I couldn't believe that he even came up to me and talked to me. Like, he literally came to me and said that. But, I mean, people be talking. So I was like, oh, okay, true. He's not going to actually do it. Then I was like, I DM'd him on Instagram. And I was like, let's just see if he's going to follow up. And he was like, hit whoever. I sent him the email, and he did it. And it was like, it was crazy. But I think it was like, yo, I'm doing this here in DeKalb, and somehow it made it to this person who I look up to so heavily. I'm doing something right, and I need to keep doing what this thing I'm doing right. So I graduated the May after that. So I was like, let me get this degree. And then once I'm out of here, I'm trying to hit the ground running when I get back to Chicago. Because, like, I really want to get to Chicago and, like, really hit the city that I'm from, number one, and where all of this great art was taking place. But I had to finish my degree. But
Were you seeing there that things were happening here?
Yeah. And it was like, you ever seen the meme of, like, Squidward looking at Patrick and SpongeBob having fun outside, and he's like looking through the window? That's literally how I felt. Like, I was like, yo, I want to be there.
Yeah.
Like, so once I graduated, I was able to really.
True.
And I mean, I was coming to Wordplay even when I was, I tried to be a teaching artist.
Yeah.
When I was when at NIU.
College?
I'm
like, damn, I don't know if that's going to work.
Like, I really,
but I remember, of course.
But that's how the capacity in which I met you. So
yeah.
Got it done.
Well, I think it also speaks to your growth. I think that's one of the things that I would, you know, I don't want to speak for you, but I think both of us kind of have.
Don't speak for me, Kevin.
I won't. But tell me if I'm wrong. I think it's one of the things we admire about Matt Muse is the work ethic.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Right. And so you know, you've been, even when you've been in college, you've been obviously not only running back and forth, but grinding very hard, which kind of brings you to not only being back in the city, but the release of this project. Yeah. I want to talk about Nappy Talk. This is what project for you? What number?
Number?
Yeah.
I'm not. We're just going to say two.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Yeah. And that's kind of what I would consider.
Yeah, we're going to say two.
I want to talk about the growth between the first project, with the name of which is
The Sick Tape.
Right. And
it's been so much growth.
No.
It was, look,
you know,
it was
how much
so
music
sick.
I consume? I yeah, literally can't.
I'm just, I'm talking.
Illustrious hip-hop journalist Tar Mahadevi. Can I remember?
I got Lord. You.
Young Noodle Cup.
I'm really into details, but sometimes they escape me.
Yeah. But yeah, The Sick Tape.
Yeah. No. What? So you put that in 2016?
No. That 2017? Came out February 2017.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh. I mean, that's a year.
Yeah.
What happened?
I mean, I think one thing is, a lot of the songs in The Sick Tape were songs that I was sitting on about a year and a half, 2 years almost. And I really just wanted to have a project out there. So I'm like, I just want to drop these songs. That was kind of like what my mindset was. I'm back in Chicago. People care. Let me get them something. And then I think between then and what I was doing with Nappy Talk, it was like, I was able to create purely. Everything on Nappy Talk was created within that year. None of that was like old songs that I was sitting on. Yeah, it was like, it was all created in that time.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was created with a singular mindset of, I really want to make a fun listen, and I want to rap my ass off. And that's kind of like, and yeah.
But it's not just surface level.
Oh, no. I mean, I'm not saying that, I don't think my shit is surface level.
No,
but I think,
for the people. It's for the people.
Yeah, but I think the approach to it was different. Like, I'm going to have fun creating this project, and that's going to be the number one focus.
Were you not having fun with the other one?
I was worried about a lot of different things. Like I just said, I put it out because I wanted people to hear me, not because I was really focused on the actual tunes, you know what I'm saying?
Well, there's a consistency to this record that, you know, you could
right,
tell.
Right, sonically.
Yeah, sonically.
The beats are, I'm sorry, way better.
Thank you. I mean,
really
that
good.
Was the goal. I appreciate it.
The
Everything
Mother
should be
Nature
going up.
Song yeah, that you what, have yeah. is fire.
You have a couple great features.
Yeah,
on
some
there.
Of the names I can't say, so I'm just going to say the first one, Nappy.
I'll say it. Yeah, Nappy Nigga Winning.
Yeah. That one's good. Then the one with Femi is good.
Negro Saiyan.
Shawnee Dez joint
Shea
is
Butter
good.
Baby.
I think those are my favorite.
That's the jam. I mean, that's the
kind of
undisputed summer jam.
Yeah. I mean, that's important that you like that.
But the Shea Butter Baby joint with Shawnee
Dez. That was a single, right?
Yeah. And it was at the listening party where I realized that it was as good as it was. I didn't like the song.
No, that's everybody loves that
song. But like,
song.
Yeah, also when you so deep in it, sometimes that's what happens, you know?
Yeah, I like the story behind it and like what made me write it. But like sonically, I wasn't in love with it because it was so different than all the other songs. But then at the listening party, like But it was so good fits. We played it twice. Like, they wanted me to play it again.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, okay, I'll take it. Fuck it.
Yeah. Well, so I guess, you know, just given the title and even some of the titles of the tracks, mm-hmm. I mean, you know, when you conceive of a project like this that mm-hmm. seems so, you know, tightly knit together, who do you imagine the audience to be? Who do you want the audience to be?
Young black kids is number one, obviously. And specifically, like, the youth that I could say the youth that I work with, but also more so like youth like me. I think about me when I was in high school. And, you know, why is that my Mount Rushmore? Because all four of those people have said things in their songs that have literally been lessons to me, like, throughout my life. Like, my parents did a phenomenal job, but they're, you know, you have your own things that spark you too. And, like, right. their songs did that for me. And so when I was sitting down writing it, I'm like, yo, how can I say I love myself where a person can hear it and it makes them say, I love myself? You know, specifically a person with nappy hair, a person who was made to feel like they don't fit right into society because they don't fit a certain physical look or because they're black. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's just like, how can I just make you feel good? And those that you would be the youth of Chicago, black youth in general, and people with nappy ass hair. And nappy means nappy means so many different things. Yeah. It's like, it's not just a physical thing. Like, it's literally something that stereotypes. So anybody who's looked at differently because of some physical trait that they stand on, or whatever trait they stand on.
That's dope.
Thank you.
I feel like I don't really hear black men talk about hair the way I hear black women talk about hair.
Yeah. Oh, so can you talk about it from Matt Muse?
No, I know. So can you talk about, like, why that's important for you to speak on that?
Yeah, I think it's because, like, I was sitting down during the creation of this thing and I was like, yo, like, hair has been a big deal for me and my family from, like,
I mean,
day
you got
one.
some
a lot going on up here.
Tall hair.
Yeah, like, and like, I remember my dad and my parents always encouraged us to, like, just let that shit be what it is. Like, my dad had braids, my mom had dreadlocks from the day I was born. I had dreadlocks when I was like 3. Like, my parents have always encouraged it. And then kind of when I got into, like, the college and the high school field, it was like, oh, I started doing things to my hair to fit into what, like, that mold said. Oh, you got to have a nice haircut to get a good job and blah 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 blah. And just like, once I left school and I left all of that, like, the garbage part of the school shit, and it was like, yo, this is me. I'm finding myself. I'm finding me. I wanted to grow my shit. I always wanted to grow my hair. And the only fear came from, like, trying to fit in. And once I let that loose, it was like, yo, my hair is like a testament of my self-confidence and of me finding, like, the courage to be like, no, I'm going to be myself. And I'm all these great things, regardless of how I'm presenting physically. And I'm not going to appease, like, some weird-ass standard that some lame set for me to look physically. I hope that made sense.
No, it does. Okay. But also, I was wondering if you would spit a verse.
Right now?
Yeah.
Wow. God. I mean, you be on Sway. Yeah. Sway in 16. Why, yeah. You know what I'm saying? Give the corner store a little something.
We like
something.
A little baby Sway.
Yeah. Wait, I'm with it. I can spit a verse. Yeah.
Okay.
This is. Do you want to just rap it?
Song?
Or you, oh, from one of the songs?
Yeah.
Oh, shit. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Oh,
no, yeah. I'll
not,
make
not
it
an
easy
exclusive?
For you.
Not an exclusive?
Oh, yeah, sure. Whatever you want. I'm not trying to make a heart.
I can do whatever. You want me to be can it some hair shit or.
Whatever you want. Right, what do you want?
It. Yeah, no, no.
What do you want?
Yeah, dealer's choice.
You have I feel like you have an opinion.
No. I just, you know, bars would be terrific.
Some bars. Okay. What's a verse that I have not? All right, this is not on the project, but. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Exclusive. All
right, cool. On every single verse, I got a fact preach. Because Diana died taking the back seat. If you're doing all that talking on your rap sheet, then you got to bag it up. That's worth the Black Street. This nappy hair, my crown. Fuck that gold shit. Unless it's on a pick with the power fist. Chicago is my throne. Kiss the tower. Your kingdom full of courage, mine's is cowardless, you get it later. Pay me now, I gotta dip, cause y'all got a lot of lip like that chick from the Great Debaters, and I hate that shit. No fellowship, no kind words, I ain't really with that talking dog, I'm all about that verb. Got a youngin' in the herd, he just told me he disturbed, cause playing in the street then turned to laying on the curb. And I won't fix my lips to tell him it'll be okay, cause that make me a liar if he go and catch a straight. But I ain't afraid to say that we gon' see a better day, a king will always find a way to watch the throne. Oh yeah, and Jay, you throwing stones from far away, you may as well be skipping rocks, cause you might be King David, but Goliath, I am not.
What?
Muse.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. Listen, let's go.
I mean, okay.
Yeah. Matt
a little
Muse,
hair in
you,
there,
man.
You know.
Yeah.
Everything. Some Chicago,
there
some workplace.
Yeah.
Some mythology.
Yeah. I put some of the Mount Rushmore in there, too.
Yeah.
You know what I'm
saying? Okay.
Everything.
All facts.
Full circle.
Matt Muse, where can people find the project?
Yeah. It's literally everywhere. Whatever streaming, whatever you got. If you want to put some money in my pocket, download it on iTunes or Bandcamp. If you just want to stream it and you ain't got no money like that, I respect it. It's on SoundCloud. It's on Apple Music. It's on Spotify.
They'll send you a little check.
They will send me a little check. It's on Tidal. You go to madmuse.com, you'll find it right there.
And where can people find you on the interconnected network?
Like I said, madmuse.com for all things merch, things like that. If you're on the social media, I'm madmuse12 on Twitter and Instagram. I don't use no other social media, so I'm trying to get my Twitter up. Follow me on Twitter, madmuse12.
Today, were there
11 Matt Muses before you?
No, I made it in 2012. And then Matt Muse is taken on both. So when I get famous, they'll probably delete that and then let me have my own my name. But for now, we Matt Muse 12 with it.
And also, fuck 12.
Fuck them. Yeah, and that's why I want to get that.
That's right. Exactly. That's right. Yeah, exactly. Let them know. Matt Muse, thank you so much for being in the corner, man. Can't thank you enough. Thank you for those exclusive bars.
No problem.
Exclusive.
Yeah, exclusive. Yeah, man. Thank you.
Thanks.
Talking about Hadaven.
Kevin Cuban.
I don't know. I'm not sold.
I haven't said it in a while, so I just felt the need.
I don't know. I don't love it. I don't love it. But I do love
I don't know.
Well, we were just going through your aliases.
Yeah, so that's one of yours. I'm sorry.
No, that's fine. I'm working on a bunch. I need more, I guess.
You have some like DJ names.
I don't, though, is the thing.
All like Shabbat. What was like the Shabbat?
Shabbat ranks.
Yeah, that one was good.
Yeah, Shabbat ranks. Yeah,
that was good.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, I don't know who. Maybe Adam Ansback gave me that. Salutes to the homie. But speaking of DJs, we have an incredible guest with us.
We do. That was a nice segue.
This evening. Thank you. You set it up. You know, it was an alley-oop. This is an architect. I mean, this is someone who has really created a blueprint for a kind of music that is indigenous to Chicago and the South Subs, someone who is put on for the culture, a partner of the dearly departed DJ Rashad, someone who has numerous records in the world, has collaborated with incredible artists, some of which I'm sure he'll talk about, and reps the Tech Life movement
and
very heavily.
Techs.
Very heavy. None other than DJ Spin is in the corner store this evening. Thank you for being with us, man.
Thank you guys for having me, man. Straight up.
We're so excited.
It's fun time.
We have some snacks and gifts for all of our corner store participants and folks who enter. So I was thinking about, you know, the music you make. Of course, in some ways it really is like the soundtrack for the city. And so there is this ridiculous flavor of Lay's potato chips. They have deep dish inspired by Giordano's pizza. I don't know if you ever had that. But
I heard about these.
Have you
tried them?
No, we should check them out, see what it is.
I'm kind of curious.
And because,
does that mean they're pizza flavored?
I imagine.
Is there a deeper pizza flavoring?
So to speak.
Is it vegan?
Are you vegan?
No, I'm talking. I'm almost there. I'm halfway.
Oh, yeah? Okay. Are you vegetarian?
I've been cutting out
the
meat.
You eat cheese?
Okay.
I mean, I'm still, you know, indulging, but I'm trying to switch
trying
it
to
up.
Cut back. Well, this is neither here nor there, but this is a jumbo honey bun because I figured, you know, in a corner store.
You can't just get a regular one for Jesus.
No, exactly.
You need the jumbo.
Fetch.
And DJ Spin, this is also, you know, you are here. We're about to, you know, hop into it, but this is also a big moment for the corner store because this is our first ever
sponsor.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I
was gonna say thank you. This is stolen.
Yeah, stolen whiskey, stolen rum, stolen spirits is the first actual factual.
Yes,
Tarmaha Devin was saying
IRL sponsor, non aspirational sponsor.
Right.
Real life sponsor.
You know, these are facts, and Stolen Spirits is our first sponsor. What we are drinking tonight, you know, we have, first of all, Stolen has a bottle of their rum, the world's first smoked rum for you. So take that home and enjoy it. And this evening, we're going to crack open this bottle of Stolen Whiskey. It is, It's first of all, it's delicious. I mean, we are sipping on it.
What is
I mean,
it? You call it Chicago Mule?
Yeah, yeah. We're enjoying a Chicago Mule, which is essentially just like
that up.
Yeah, it's essentially just like anything for Chicago. Just put, like pour some in a cup, and that's no. But this is you know this whiskey is it's got a little like toast, a little smoke in it. Yeah. You know, because it's got like the toasted oak stave. I don't know what that means, but like this is like a it's like an aged whiskey that tastes a little like scotch and
it's
like with the
years,
ginger.
Right?
Yeah, this shit is.
Yeah, I'm rolling like it's stolen.
Baby.
Listen.
Listen, it's stolen if you need a catchphrase.
So yeah. So listen. So salutes to them and salutes to you for being here, man. We have a lot of ground to cover because I don't even know how old you are, but I feel like
you got stories.
I know. Yeah. I know. So let's hop in. Does it start for you? Does the story start for you in the South Subs?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, you know, that's where I'm from. That's where my mom stay.
What suburb?
It's Markham. So we right by the skating rink. That was the birthplace. Basically, a lot of DJs got their beginnings at Markham Roller Rink or the other illustrious roller rinks of Chicago, like 87th Rink and Route 66 and or Rainbow Roller Rink.
Hey. Okay, so roller rinks in Chicago music and culture are legendary.
Yes.
For a lot of reasons. What was so important about the roller rink for you?
Man, it introduced me to house music, the dancing and the music. Basically, every skating rink in the city has a disco area from the 70s. So coming up 80s, 90s, they were still utilizing these discos and yeah, they was just playing house music at first, you know. It went from hip-hop to, like, just straight house music. And then, like, that was it right there. Once I seen people dancing, getting it in on the dance floor, I'm like, okay. I like this ghetto house music shit right here.
What years are this for you?
Man, I started going to the skating rink very young as a, you know, just a skater. But the disco was the preteen. So I want to say, like, 11, 12 years old. 93, 94-ish.
Yeah.
You know, just hanging out with the homies.
Yeah.
So Markle style. They had the rink, and then besides the rink, they had like a little dance floor.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a separate disco. Yeah.
And what is significant? I mean, it's because that's a particular Chicago story, right? That in other, you know, discos or other roller rinks around the country, they weren't necessarily playing house the way that Chicago DJs were playing house. So can you describe what that music was at that time?
Man, I could just remember the DJ. Shouts out to my dude, DJ Malcolm, one of my mentors. He was playing like No Way Back. Like that was his beginning track every Saturday night. Mm-hmm. He had dropped No Way Back, and then it had just built from that, like to whatever new was out and stuff like that. So basically, it was all house music, man. It was crazy. And I didn't understand that it was new. The music we was listening to was new at the time. I thought it was like somewhat old, you know, had a little time on it. But a lot of the stuff he was playing was like brand new. So when I thought I was late to the house music, I was actually right in the cusp.
Mm. Right. Okay. And let's go back before, because I mean, I wonder how you even get to the roller rink. Like, you know, who allows you to go to such a venue in, you know, the early 90s?
I mean, it's around the corner from your house.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Literally a block away. So like, yeah, they threw teen parties and stuff like that. So, for us to be there was mandatory. That's my area. It's my neighborhood. We had to represent, you know, every time. So it was like one of those things holding down our neighborhood. We was lucky enough to have a spot that we could hold down, so we had to hold it down.
Right.
And were your parents going to the
Yeah, my mom always went. Like every Sunday, that was like her thing. Going to skate on Sundays. It was like the popping thing for all the grownups to do.
Yeah, and she would take you with her?
Not on Sunday.
Oh. That was her time.
yeah, as a grown up time. But you know, over the years, me and my mom, we used to skate because she's a really good skater. So she used to teach me, you know, back in the day. But then that disco life just started getting to me, and I ain't want to skate no more.
Oh, you didn't want to skate?
Wait, what do you mean? What happened?
Man, it was like
the disco life got you.
The disco, and they cut on that disco sound, man. It was like, okay, all right, time to put these skates up. We finna run in the disco and jam.
Okay,
you know?
So you just say disco is like a generic term for dancing.
Nah. It's
they actually play disco music.
No. It's actually called the disco.
Oh, that's
like the
name.
Disco the area. Disco tech.
Okay.
Like
that.
Yeah, the disco area had an old dude with a fro and some, you know, you know what I'm saying, dancing, doing a boogie dance.
Oh, really?
Oh, so actual disco as well then.
Yeah, that was the dance
spot. But not
spot.
The disco music.
No disco
so
music.
So he was doing that to house music.
Yeah.
That's funny.
But of course, I mean, house in so many ways is like the extension.
Definitely the extension of disco.
I'm just like thinking of it. Just in my head.
Yeah, literally what is a disco?
Maybe he has like a little suede vest. It's like burgundy and like, you know.
No, I like your creative direction on this memory.
The pants on the wall. You ain't off.
They the pants like match pants. The vest, but then he has like a pastel like button up, but it's like satin. That's in my head.
I like it.
Scarf, is that close? No scarf?
It's very close. It was just an illustration, so they ain't get all detailed like that.
Well, there
but you
go.
Was right with the bell bottoms
and the
shirt.
Fro.
Yeah.
And he had like maybe. Was it bell bottoms?
Bell bottoms.
Yeah,
for sure.
Maybe he had a little platform.
Yep,
that's cute. Yep, that's so cute. So
to
look.
Get his boogie on.
And what is Markham like, particularly when you were coming up at this time?
Markham as the city was, how could I put it? It's pretty a hustler's town. So I grew up with a lot of hustlers. It was gangbangers in my area, but the block I grew up on was hustlers. So I learned how to peep they hustle. And, you know, it gave me a lot of skills with my hustling with selling CDs and tapes.
Right.
Were you at the rink to kind of keep out of all that? Or
No, that was the place we got in trouble.
Oh, true.
Until I started dancing and DJing and, you know, and indulging
really
in the arts.
Yeah.
Because all we used to do was just walk around, try to look tough, hold down our neighborhood. We from Markham, y'all in our town. So,
true.
You know. It was one of those things back then, the pride. We had to hold it down for city pride.
But that is one of the misunderstandings of the suburbs, and particularly the south suburbs, all the western suburbs, too. I also think of a city like Waukegan or something like that, where you hear suburbs in the traditional American imagination. You think one thing, but Markham is certainly something different from that.
Yeah,
that.
We 15 minutes outside of the city on the south. It, to me, it never was really suburban. We don't got picket fences and like lawns.
Right.
We got lawns, but no picket fences.
We got a yard.
I don't even think nobody has a picket fence per se. But yeah, predominantly black neighborhood, black governed. So like, there's a lot of pride behind like the south suburbs as far as being cities where black residents govern where they live. So when I was younger, I didn't understand that. I had no clue, but it definitely shaped me into a better person knowing, cause I got plugged with the mayor. The mayor used to run the skating rink and that was my homie and he gave me my first shot at DJing and stuff like that. So,
oh, he did?
Yeah. The mayor Markham.
Well, he gave you a DJing gig? Oh, at the rink.
Yeah. Cause he owned the rink.
Yeah. True.
Wow, that is some like a way to get elected is own the popping cultural space in
like,
that city.
Like you have
city.
To damn near.
Right. That actually makes
I am
sense.
The governor of this rink and your city.
Yeah.
So all right, so it seems like maybe there was a moment where you could have gone one way and then it was the culture, it was the music, it was the art that kind of brought you into this other direction. When did you first begin to think of yourself as a creator, participant in that space?
Man, just from Jump Street, like until somebody embarrassed me on the dance floor, then I knew I was like out of my league.
Well, we need to hear that story.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, we all grew up just dancing, doing it wasn't footwork at the time. It was more like animation. That's what they called it. Like somebody run up on you, do some Mortal Kombat, knock your head off, Street Fighter, hit you with a fireball. And, like, once the dance started evolving, like, them cats that was doing that was getting towed up by the cats that knew how to work them feet, you know? It was, like, kind of quick, too. We didn't know what we was doing at the time, but, like, the older kids, they was out there getting it in, battling and stuff like that, so we was watching them. So we just learned from they, you know, from what they taught us. And it wasn't that many dance groups in the south suburbs at the time. So like people just out there representing, coming from the city, showing people what they got, like, yeah, we out here. And it's like, we learn from each other. So it's like a ping effect. Like people come out to Markham, we'll go out to the city and like, we all have little exchanges of culture.
So I'm curious about the dance culture because part of what I Part of what is taking place is that this is a dance battle that's taking place in the context of house music.
Yeah.
Of course, a lot of house dancers are taking notes from a lot of different spaces.
Yeah.
The ball, famously in New York, Vogue battles, B-boy and B-girl cultural battles. But the kind of dancing that you're talking about is also different from that, too.
Yeah.
Right. Like, so what kind of dances did they do the house music before?
Well, it was really just one dance at first, the percolator.
Mm-hmm. Oh, right, right, right.
You know what I mean? So it was like three different variations of the percolator, which turned into somebody like knocking your head off.
Oh, into the animation.
Mortal Kombat shit.
Yeah. You really like referencing Mortal Kombat.
But because that theater, though, is not only indicative of battle culture, but that's also something that B-boys would do, you know, mm-hmm. and they would, you know, in part because all of those kids are playing mad video games at the time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so they're imitating that.
It was that
movement.
Old. Yeah. Like Mortal Kombat was that old.
And Mortal Kombat from like 92.
Oh, true.
Yeah.
True. Yeah. Wait, so were you dancing? You were dancing in the rink. How did you know you wanted to DJ in the rink?
Man, I just kept hearing music. Like, I kept hearing, it's weird. I can't really explain it for real. But like, one of my cousins used to DJ there. So that like gave me an outlet to, you know, see my cousin, like my family member, like go nuts. And he'd play all these house songs and all that. After the other guy I was telling you about, DJ Malcolm, my cousin, he was doing this thing there. He was young. He was like 17, 16 years old.
He was at the rink. Saying?
Yeah. Yeah. Markham. Markham rode the rink. And I wanted to make music. I don't know. It was early on. I used to break down fucking boom boxes, tape decks, fucking turntables.
Take them out, pull them apart and put them together?
Yeah, yeah. And I figure out how it worked. And then, like, I make my own little DJ rigs. I didn't know what I was doing. I get pieces from all around the city. People give me stuff like, oh, here go my Uncle Old mixer, stuff like that. Here go one turntable. Like, it was like just pieces. But I take these little pieces and I make it work. Like, I figured out like an auxiliary end could record. So I like make little fake mixtapes without like real vinyl. But like, I learned how to hone my mixing skills from doing like some straight bootleg stuff.
Well, how old were you when doing that?
Man, I was like 10, 11.
Wow. Yo. That's wild.
That's what geniuses do.
I never even thought I don't think at 10 I was thinking of those things.
That, you know,
that's really dope.
There's a story about the Dalai Lama breaking down radios and putting them back together.
Wow.
Just on some genius shit. Like, that is honestly, I think, what geniuses do is, like, they deconstruct a machine and they put it back together in order to learn how it works.
I didn't know what I was doing.
No, that's, definitely.
That's incredible. So you were manipulating kind of the, you know, some of the technology around at that time in order to find what out of it? Like, what were you?
I wanted to just mix music together. So somebody, I can't remember who, had just a tape recorder, you know, just one of them hand tape recorders, but it had a pitch. So once I found this pitch deck on a little hand recorder, I'm like, oh, okay, I could slow down and speed up music like on the fly. So I figured out how to use an auxiliary in, and I was doing little mixes, basically not being able to control one side, but I could control the other. So I blend songs with the pitch and then try to figure out how to blend the next song by moving the pitch of the song that's already playing.
So you're acting like a DJ. I mean, this is you're doing by ear what Serato does.
You're doing it before you even realize what you're doing.
We couldn't see any of the music that we were playing. It was just all off the ear.
But the pitch seems this is part of what I'm so interested in is the pitch becomes probably very important to the BPMs that begin to compose what will become juke and footwork music.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Because house is operating at like 120 beats or so per minute.
Yeah.
And then so at what point do you all begin to make it faster?
Okay.
Well, I feel like you're...
Am I getting too far ahead?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay,
all right. There's a whole. We gotta talk about ghetto house.
Okay, all right. Let's do it.
I'm a fake tech life scholar.
No, it's good. It's good.
Should I take the fake part out?
You're not fake.
Yeah. I can't wait
for the lab.
I can't wait
for the book.
Hey, actually, yes.
Yeah. Right.
All right. So.
We're still at the rink, G.
We're still at the rink.
Yeah.
Okay. what I'm curious about at the rink is, like, how do you then become a creator or an artist then out of that space?
Okay, so basically I was like 15. They were letting, like, younger DJs come in and do, like, guest sets. Like, Friday nights, the real pumping night was Saturday, so they let guest DJs come in. I seen Rashad, DJ Jenna, and DJ Nafis play. And this was 95, right? Yeah, freshman year, my freshman year. And, man, I see these young cats, they playing. But before that, I was hearing them on WKKC back in, like, 93, 94. They was the same DJs that was the young guy. I didn't know they were young, but it was a program on WKKC 89.3, the college station, and it was called the Young People's Network, where they let the young guys come in and do DJ sets and learn how to program and stuff like that with the radio. So I was listening to my peers at the same time when I was learning how to do my craft. They was already doing it. And so when I seen them at the skating rink, like, oh, man, okay. I didn't know they was my age because they was on that platform. But then I get to talk to Rashad or Nafis, and, like, they like, yeah, man, we teenagers too. And I'm like, okay, word. That's what's up. And that, like, definitely jump-started me into, like, okay, I could do this too.
What was it like seeing Rashad DJ for the first time?
Well, the first time I could definitely remember bro DJing, he was by himself on a Friday night. Off night at the skating rink, like, a lot of people don't go there on Friday, so it's like a field trip night or something like that. And he was in a whole dicky suit on with a big ass box, like, wavy bacon box. Like, he had bacon waves. He had that good head. You feel me?
It's a bar.
That's my dude. Yeah,
bacon box.
And, like, he up there playing, and at the time it's all vinyl, so he doing a vinyl set. He jumped down from DJing and started dancing, footworking against whoever was out there.
Oh, somebody, wow. He was battling somebody.
He just came down, battled whoever was dancing, whoever wanted some, battled, playing two records, go back up there and change the record. Like, I ain't never seen nobody do that.
Yeah.
And when I seen that, I was like, okay, that solidified it. And that was after, like, the other show I was telling you guys about. I was like, okay, damn, this dude right here, he's somebody I need to know.
But you still hadn't made the connection that you heard him on the radio.
Not yet.
Yeah.
Nope, not yet. Not till we got to school.
That style of dance, did you, at that time, were you calling it footwork?
Nah, man. It was just dancing at the time. Yeah, it was called footwork per se, you know, because...
I feel like maybe you had to know or something.
Yeah, definitely had to know, like, oh, he moving them feet. That's footwork, you know what I mean? But it's a general term, too. They still use the term in breaking and stuff like that, hip-hop dance. So, you know, we did all that stuff,
right? But
you seen it before?
Yeah, that style.
Nah, I ain't seen it before the skating rinks. And I want to say the first person I seen really hit some works was Ant Brown, one of the pioneers of a move called the Irken Jerk, which is like the basic of basic footwork moves.
Yeah.
And if you could describe it, if that's possible, I think that might be instructive, given that we're on the radio.
Oh, well, it's a move where you move the left side of your body to the left and you kick your right foot out. So it's like an opposite motion, you know, left and then you kick out your right and you kick out your left type move.
Is it like an up rock, like the equivalent? Isn't that like a starting move?
It's kind of
The up rock is a starting move.
It's definitely the basics.
Like equivalent, that's what I mean.
Yeah, it's the basics.
Yeah.
The beginning of, like, people taking it from, like, stationary, like, okay, they'll be like one, two, one foot, it'd be like left, right, right, left, left, right, right, left, left. Then I start seeing people go right, right, crossover, left, left, crossover, to right, right, spin around, crossover, left, left. You know what I mean? Like, it evolved pretty quick.
But footwork is different than b-boying, obviously.
Right, yeah.
And it is a, would you say, a uniquely Chicago form?
For sure. For sure. Definitely a unique Chicago form. I never seen really too many people adopt how we move our feet to any other music. I ain't really seen it in any other, like, Detroit, they jit, but it's more like upper body movement.
Yeah, what is jit?
They do a bit of, like, footwork, but they do more so body. It's body popping. Not like crump, but, like,
sort of.
It's real similar to footwork, but it's hard to explain.
More upper body movement.
Yeah, yeah.
There's kind of like
Vogue a bit, you know, not Vogue E, but like it's a lot of hand movements.
But that came after footwork.
I don't know. I guess it was around the same time.
Okay.
But that is the interesting thing I think about, you know, one dance period.
Yeah.
Music.
I mean,
as
nothing's
well.
Really linear, but it's cool to like.
Try to trace the lineage or almost like the dance etymology, I guess, of how these forms and fashions and styles evolve. I mean, I think Chicago claims footwork. I think
for sure.
I don't think there's any doubt about that.
Right. But I think what I find interesting is I've also heard dancers from the, you know, the disco and the roller rink era also claim b-boying in Chicago, in part because the groundwork that Chicago, that b-boying came to kind of be known for.
Yeah.
I've heard many roller rink dancers talk about being innovated in Chicago. And so just that this
Boy,
history.
When?
In the 60s.
Yeah, because I found out as of recently, Shabadoo, Ozone from Breaking, he's originally from Chicago, and then he took his talents to L.A.
Oh.
Yeah, so he could get in movies. This was like the 70s.
Oh.
Yeah, they was in like skit shows in the 70s. And like I'm like, wow, he from Chicago? That gave me so much more pride. I'm like, okay.
Right.
My man's in them out
gotta
here.
Go back
what did you call the country, Chicago?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I'm from Chicago, the country. I'm from the country of Chicago.
Yeah. Well, so you were dancing before you were DJing, though.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, even before that first time you were given a shot to DJ.
Yeah,
what kind of dancing were you doing?
Just dancing, like Michael Jackson style.
But, like, because you wanted to or because somebody else was doing it?
And... just because I wanted to.
Yeah.
Like, and that was the thing to do. Like, I don't know. Like, nowadays, music's so slow. I don't think people learn how to dance in the same fashion how we learn how to dance.
There are dances, but there's... The way that dances spread is different.
Yeah. So, I don't know, man. Like, it went from the percolator to, like, man, people just going all out.
Yeah.
And, like, it happened kind of fast from, like, 92, 93, and then 94, everything changed.
Yeah. So.
What was that change?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
It changed from people doing corny little moves, like knocking your head off, to actually doing footwork. And, you know, it was called footwork at the time, but people, we didn't know what was actually happening. We didn't know it was the evolution at the time. We was just doing what was happening at the
time. Right. You don't know it was a historic moment.
But what do you think marks that change? I mean, what happens to kind of quickly? That is also the thing I love about youth culture is that sometimes it evolves so quickly.
You don't even know it's happening.
And if you're out of the city or the space for like a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, you miss entire like evolutions of style.
I could tell you a story.
And it's not as documented back then as it is now.
So basically, Rashad was in a group called House Arrest 2 at the time, another big dance group in Chicago. You know what I'm saying? Shouts out to House Arrest. He was in House Arrest, and he had another buddy that was in House Arrest. And we called them up to battle, like, the Markham villain. You know what I'm saying? He was the dude that'll hit you with this Hadouken or Sonic Boom so hard, he'll hit you in the chest, right? And he didn't know any footwork moves at the time. So call on my homies. I say, man, I need y'all to come up here and handle these dudes. You know what I'm saying? Well, one dude particular. And I got to see them just wreck this dude. Just hit him with so much new shit that he stopped. He stopped doing that Hadouken Street Fighter shit. And that was the moment where I knew this shit changed. Like, it was official. Like,
and you saw Rashad do that.
Yeah, Rashad and my homeboy Lawrence. Shouts out to Lawrence. Yeah.
And what year is this about? This 94, 95?
Yeah, 94, 95. Yeah.
When did you
95.
When did you really connect with Rashad?
95.
Yeah.
Yeah, we had homeroom together in high school.
What high school?
At Thornwood.
Hey, shout out Thornwood.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
It was crazy. So what ironically ended up happening, we had a homeroom that was basically like the party. How could I put it? They made like balloons and baskets in there, right? Like a home crafts room.
Home economics.
Yeah. So that was our homeroom. So we, out of all the classes we could have been in, we got the one with a boombox.
Mm.
And fate. Like, we took that shit over. We ain't letting nobody else get no tick on the radio. So we'll be in there practicing moves, listening to new mixes. And that, like, that's how me and Rashad really got tight. I made a mix with some of those mixtapes I was mixing together. And I picked up a tape from them guys the week before. So it was this track called Space Age Pimpin'. It wasn't out yet. And he like, how did you get that track? I'm like, man, I played it off the beginning of y'all tape. He like, word, I hear you.
And so yeah, that relationship obviously is something that is, you know, figures just tremendously prominently in your life.
Yeah.
So, I mean, immediately you guys clicked like brothers, or did it take a little while for it to evolve?
It was kind of immediate. Like, we seen each other around. Like, the story I told when he was DJing in Markham. Was another team spot out there called Jubilation that was basically done in a laser tag setting.
But it was an all ages club, right? Is this or
it's Jubilation? Teen. You had club. To be a teenager.
Okay,
at least a teen.
At least a teen.
At least a teen.
But was it? Did it skew older as well?
Yeah. The older cast was there because it was popping. Like, I remember seeing Bushwick Bill there. You know what I mean? Like, turning up. Like, Ferris was DJing.
It was a club.
It was a laser tag spot. Okay. They turned into a club.
But could you still play laser tag?
Not at the same time.
Damn.
Like, earlier the next day.
That's what I'm looking for.
Yeah, I had, like, birthday parties there when I was little.
You got to footwork and then, like, shoot somebody with a laser, you know?
Yeah, that would have been the shit. But, nah, it was set up so dope. It was, like, mirrors. Like on the main floor.
Uh-huh.
Speakers set up, like, in columns. The DJ was, like, on guy mode up top.
But, like, who's thinking of doing these things?
But there was a moment in Chicago. I mean, it's illegal now to have these all-ages spaces. But there was a moment in the kind of, you know, not the end of house per se, but, like, during the latter days of house where all-ages clubs were prominent. I mean, I went to Medusa's on the north side. You went to Jubilation on the south side. We used to sneak into the bathroom at like 10:30, 11:30 and try to not get kicked out.
What do you mean?
Because they would come through, and if you didn't have ID or something on your wrist,
you were young.
Yeah, and we try to sneak into like the older portion of the evening.
Mm-hmm.
But for that, you know,
it was the same wave going on.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because but they made that illegal like in 2001, I think.
So those were just like, that was a teen club.
Yes and no.
Yeah.
Right? Because it was all ages. It was for teens, and also they were older heads.
Oh, so, like,
from
right.
7 to 10.
You could be young.
Yeah.
And then you
after
be
10:30, they usher out the youngins.
Yes. Like a mug.
Yeah.
Unless you were slick.
Hide in the bathroom.
Yeah. Slick plugs.
Exactly. So that was one of the spots where you all connected, went, the Jubilation joint, you and Rashad?
Yeah. Well, I didn't know him at that point.
Okay.
It took till high school till I'm like, yo, you that dude that I seen DJ and get down from that DJ set in my land in Markham. Hold on, man. I need to know who you are. Then that's when I found out, oh, yeah, me, Rashad, Gant, and Jana was on the Young People's Network on KKC. So I'm like, whoa, that's y'all? Y'all cold. And then that was like it. Like, Rashad invited me over to his parents' place at the time. He was grounded. So he was in there like practicing some moves and stuff. He go hop in the refrigerator. His dad come in. I'm like sitting there. I'm like, hey, how you doing? He like, Rashad in the refrigerator. He was looking crazy and stuff. He like, come here, let me holler at you. And he's like, yeah, bro, you got to go. So like, I just had to hit the bus. Get home.
He didn't live in Markham.
Nah, Calumet City.
Oh, okay.
For like 10 minutes away.
Around the corner, yeah.
Yeah.
So can you tell us kind of who DJ Rashad is, you know, for those that might not know?
Man, just amazing dude. Like, he was just a bright spirit. Like, couldn't nothing stop that brother. If he wanted to do it, he was going to do it. He was going to do it to the fullest. He lived his life to the fullest. So, like, I could smile today and be like, yeah, my bro did his thing to the fullest. Like, I don't know. It was, like, instant friendship. He was from a different neighborhood. But, like, at the time, it wasn't cool to be from different neighborhoods and be cool with somebody. But
even
me and
when
him,
it's that close?
Yeah. Like, to be honest with you, I didn't know what Calumet City was until I got to high school. Mm. Like, that's where Riv Oaks Shopping Mall was, but I thought it was called Riv Oaks. Mm. You know, I wasn't driving, so before I was driving, you just think something is called what it is. And then it's like, oh, you stayed by Riv Oaks Shopping Mall. Okay, cool. So it's like, that was one of the things that brought us together, but also it took us away from the neighborhoods we was from, because it was like, oh, you mess with this Cal City dude, oh, you mess with this Markham dude. We like, yeah, mm-hmm. What's the problem with that?
Yeah.
You and DJ Rashad are, in my mind, you know, as I said at the intro, but the architects of this style of dance, the style of music, the culture that has come to be known as Chicago footwork.
But also bringing it outside Chicago.
True.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, ambassadors for the culture.
Definitely.
Around the world.
Yeah.
Was that the plan? I mean, did you all talk about that? I mean, was that from, you know, at what point did you all know that this was the life? All right.
I fast forward to 2003. DJ Godfather from Detroit. He had a record label called Twilight 76 at the time. And he came up with this idea of juke tracks. Since Dance Mania had went under in like 2000, he was like, man, it's so much music that you guys got from Chicago. I want to still keep that movement going. And we was happy as hell. Like, nobody really approached anybody about juke music at the time. We thought, you know,
it's very local.
Yeah. We just thought we was the only kids doing it and keeping our culture alive of house music. You know, we never wanted to change the name from ghetto house to footwork. It just naturally happened due to the music that was coming out at the time.
Explain what ghetto house is.
Well, ghetto house is what happened right after house music, basically a faster version. So house music was 120 beats per minute. Ghetto house was 135 to 140, just like that. And basically more hood chants and and raunchy chants, like just crazy, crazy, crazy vocals. And like that definitely drew us in. But at the same time, it was cats that was making like different style of drum beats, you know, that like helped us footwork better, which made us want to make tracks in that vein, per se. Before it was called footwork music, it was just ghetto house. And it was like, okay, it was a certain set of tracks. I want to say RP Boo came with the Baby Come On.
Salutes.
DJ PJ came with this track called Chase Me. And then that was like, that was the blueprint to the juke and footwork to come.
Mm-hmm. It's an incredible history.
Yeah. Know? There's just so many details.
Yeah, right. I mean, that's part of what, you know, in your
interests
book
me.
That, you know, I'm looking forward to read. is that history. But, all right, so, I mean, I don't know if we're in 2003 or not. I have no idea. I don't care where we are.
Yeah, no, we are.
Yeah, because
I think we just, he just did all the, Ghetto House.
Yeah.
Dance Mania.
Up to footwork. And so, I guess, at what point did you all begin to kind of use that terminology and why?
Well, footwork, it came super later. It was all about juking. Right. We was with this record label called Clown House Music back in the early 2000s, from 2000 to about 2002 or something like that. And like, shouts out to my dude DJ Thaz. He was one of the first young guys that was out here really trying to push the music inside of like Best Buy and these different avenues that sold CDs. So we were getting mixtape deals. We weren't putting out single tracks at all.
Best Buy?
Through Clown House Music.
We sold their
CDs through Best Buy.
Yeah.
And we was happy as hell for that. Like, oh, we got a CD in Best Buy.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, that was cool.
I mean, Best Buy was the spot.
Oh, yeah. Best Buy was the spot.
So to have your CD in Best Buy, we felt like Master P or Tupac or something, you know?
That's right.
It was cool. Yeah. But like at the time, it was just mixtape deals. So we did a little mixtape deal with that guy, and it went for a few. And then we started learning like actually how much really it takes to put money behind all this physical product and stuff like that. Like, we was just young, so we thought bro was trying to do us bogus at the time. But like, he put a lot of money and time into it, and we didn't understand that at the time. So we like got into it with him and like went to Beatdown.
Oh, so it kind of went sour.
So it went from Clown House to Beatdown.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's a record label, not a practice.
We're not giving him the Beatdown.
Another cool DJ. Right. Shouts out to DJ Clint, Beatdown crew.
Right. So you moved labels.
Yeah, basically.
What year is this?
That's 2000, 2001.
Okay.
Okay.
Something like that.
And I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but juking is always been to me the music that evolved from house, ghetto house, to juking.
Yeah.
And then footwork is
fast.
The genre is the dance form that emerged out of juking.
Yep.
Right.
So juking and footworking is almost exactly the same thing, except a juke track is more so like bounce and break your back, you know, and girls get out there and they bounce and they twerking and stuff like that.
Right.
Whereas a footwork track would be more so of a abstract just rhythm.
Right.
With some off
more
claps.
Experimental.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
There's an ethereal nature to some of the footwork music, particularly that, you know, that you and Rashad and now Tech Life is producing. There is also the break your back type of music.
Yeah.
But there's also like a really incredible ethereal, like where I could put it on writing and kind of vibe out. Whereas like the break your back juke music I can't write to.
Right.
But
it has that same like repetitive vocal, you know, that almost works as an instrument in itself.
Yeah, for sure.
I feel like there's
So then, you know, y'all form your crew, Ghetto Technicians.
Mm-hmm.
Why y'all do that? Because y'all weren't a crew before.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's always crew based. Yeah. You know, but...
But that's such an interesting part of Chicago.
We felt like with Beatdown... Basically, it was more so driven toward like the city guys, and we was from the suburbs, so we wanted to nurture like our suburb roots, you know what I'm saying, versus the city roots. So like Ghetto Technicians, it ended up spreading out to Cicero, Illinois, with our Latino homies, you know what I'm saying. Shouts out DJ Pills, Big J, Remy, them my dudes. I still love them to this day, you know what I'm saying. Like they still going hard, and they super young. Like they still young. Like we met these young dudes like when they was like 12 years old or something like that. So like they probably only like 26, 24 now.
Yeah. That's wild.
But like
what was
spread.
I doing when I was 12?
It spread.
Not that.
It spread like wildfire. Yeah. It's weird because it was a few moments on the radio where WGCI played like the 22nd workout. Then it was like the extended workout that happened early 2000s and stuff like that. Then Power 92 came about 2003. When they started getting a DJ roster and they was playing the house music and stuff like that. So it was like we had a few outlets to play our music, but we didn't think it was, how could I put it? We didn't think it was that serious until like Godfather approached us with the deal from Detroit. And we like, okay, other people outside of Chicago want to put out our music. I think we got something.
Because did you feel like the acceptance of the music in Chicago was slow?
Definitely, even to this day.
Right,
Even to this day, I still got to re-educate people whenever I'm around, because you know they know, you know, the certain stuff that get ran through the floor, you know, on the radio. But it's like, yo, I made that. Yo, Rashad made that. Boogie made that. Like Clint made that. Like we are real people, you know. Like they kind of treated our music as a accessory. And we never like got sound scanned because they play it in a mixed form, you know. So
or they don't know the history.
Well, nah, DJ Nafis is from the land, so he come from the whole, you know, he was the youngest DJ at the time back in the day, and I just know that he needed a little bit more leverage, so I never fought him for, like, not helping us, but he played our music, but result was people just think it's Chicago music, and they don't identify any artists to the sound.
Right, it's just the fast drums per se.
You're
or whatever.
In early 2000s.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But you're saying maybe even now too. There's still misconception about.
Yeah. It's definitely because how could I put it? We've been gone. Me and Rashad started taking off in 2010. We left it up to the guys that were still home to hold it down at home, but all they knew was what we showed them. So if we was going overseas, they wanted to go overseas too. They didn't grow up like us in the 90s where we
figuring shit out.
Yeah. Like they didn't know about the radio being how it was, and like we fighting to get on the radio and like fighting to get our spot. They didn't know about that. They just see what they see from us in the internet. And like, you know, for good or for bad, it formed a crew.
But then y'all formed Tech Life.
Yeah. 2011, 2012.
What was the push to do that?
MySpace. It was the true end of the MySpace era. and we wanted to like weed out all these fake MySpace dudes that was claiming ghetto technicians. Mm. A lot of people they throw up the logo or something like that, and we like, nah, man, y'all not ghetto technicians.
Yeah,
we gonna switch this all the way up.
Y'all logo the same as a Tech Life, like the
totally different. Oh, totally okay, different. Okay. Yeah.
But you said, I mean, right before that, you said that you and Rashad had started to go overseas in 2010.
2010, yep.
What was the first opportunity to do that, to travel abroad together?
2010. Basically, I got all my equipment took by CPD off 83rd in South Chicago. We threw a party, and the police took all my equipment. Right before I went overseas for the first time. So I ain't get my equipment back till like a year and a half later. But like that
they
was
just
like
held on to it.
The police did. Yeah,
I can't believe you got it back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I got plug. I got cousin that's retired CPD, so okay. I got it
all
back.
Right. All right.
But like it was crazy. At the same time, like I had a place I moved out and at my mom's, and like was with my girl, and like I'm like, yeah, I'm finna go overseas, and all this was on the back of my homie. Shout out Nima Nazim. That's my G. Like he like helped us out a lot. Like he put like a lot of his college tuition money up to help us travel.
Wow.
You know, so like we definitely owe him a lot of gratitude. Nima Nazim, my G, I love you, bro. He believed in us from early on. He was one of the guys that was all about dissensus and all these blog spots that talked about it. Like, man, they talking about footwork. We like, what is you talking about, bro? We don't care about no website, bro. That ain't real.
Little did you know.
Yeah. We were selling like hard copy CDs at mix shops at the time.
No, everything
so
is like
we didn't care about the internet at the time. We thought the internet was all about free music, and we wasn't about that. That's why we didn't have music on YouTube 10 years ago.
But right. Yeah, even in 2010, it was all about the physical. You know?
Absolutely. Yeah. But so your first experience then going overseas, what was how did that come about?
It was crazy. We was out there. We was with this guy named Thomas Big Dope P. Shouts out Big Dope P. Took care of us. And basically, we were stationed out in Paris. We was living out this one house in Paris.
That must have been wild. I can only imagine.
It was crazy. So our first gig was in Belgium. So we took a train from Paris to Belgium. This party was off the chain. Like, it was off the chain. It was ready for us. They was ready. They was full on ready. And basically, after the show, we was at the hotel. And at the time, cell phones wasn't that popular. So Big Dope P decided to make all these long distance calls from our hotel rooms, and we like drank all the mini bar, and we didn't know no better. We thought all this stuff was coming with our rooms and stuff.
Yeah.
And basically we got banned from Belgium after that night. So I haven't been back
to Belgium.
Not to that party.
Still not to that party.
I've been to Belgium.
Still exists?
Okay. All right.
I've been to Belgium, but not the Regulate party. So
that party's still around?
I'm not sure.
Oh,
but,
okay. I'm sure you're fine.
Apologies to Regulate, but we didn't know any French
y'all listen
or Belgium at the time. You know, I still love you, Big Dope PG, but you got over on us, G.
That's amazing. So you all were putting on for the culture abroad nationally. I mean, this is the beginning of
and this was all off the strength, man, of the homie that had a couple dollars that he could fly us out there and was believing in this guy's word. So we got our few shows. Like, I flew out to Barcelona. We did a show in Paris. I think Rashad was supposed to go to London, and that's where everything got messed up because he got sent back home. He didn't actually get deported, but he got denied entry. And
damn.
He swear he didn't tell him he was a DJ, but I know Rashad, and he said, I'm DJ Rashad.
Right.
That could just be like your first name, no?
And so my dude, Bok Bok, you know what I'm saying? Shouts out to Bok Bok, you know what I'm saying? Nice slugs. They were basically throwing a big party out there, a big Halloween party. And Rashad couldn't get through customs.
Can't tell him you're working.
He had to go back
home.
Yeah,
you got a fib.
Yeah, he had to go back home. I'm still in Paris, like kind of living it up with my dude DJ Tamil from the Big Brick Bandits from on the East Coast. And we like, man, we over there getting this bad news. Like, man, Rashad got sent home. You know, and you got to remember this before cell phones was popping like that overseas. So we getting all this news through like the internet, and we like
through
man.
MySpace.
Yeah. Well, yeah. No, Facebook
email?
At the time.
Okay,
Facebook was out.
Facebook's
you know what I'm saying?
Cool then, yeah.
But yeah.
Well, what was the reception of that music like?
Man,
I mean, I know they're like, obviously Europe is really into what? All that trance
techno and
techno,
all that.
Yeah.
So, yeah. They was
it's like
with
a cousin.
They was with it. Like, it was a few shows that we did that they wasn't ready. But for the most part, like, we was getting asked to play, like, extra time. Like,
did you expect that?
Nah, man. All I wanted to do was DJ for the radio back in the day. Like, that was the dream right there. Like, yeah. I just wanted to DJ for the radio, be a presence in Chicago, you know, represent what we do that's homegrown. But it went a whole nother direction.
Yeah.
You know, so we have... We don't even have that much time, and there's so much.
Okay, let's do a fast forward
if we can. Yeah. I want to ask about, I think one of the best records period ever made in Chicago is Double Cup.
Yeah, mm. All day.
And so this comes out in 2014.
Yeah.
You're heavily involved with this. Tell us about the project.
Yeah.
I guess and the you know,
basically the Double Cup project was our chance to show people that, you know, we wasn't just on Planet Moo as far as, like, people knew about the Bangs and Works compilation and stuff like that. Shouts out to Planet Moo for giving us opportunity. But we knew that time, the music that Mike Paradinas was picking wasn't what was relevant to what was moving the sound and the culture at the time. So when we got offered, when Rashad got offered the deal with Hyperdub, we like, okay, this is a breath of fresh air. We could, like, go ham. And, like, Code 9 was so cool. The guy who runs Hyperdub, we was like, man, this is probably the best thing we could ever done, was, like, linked up with him, because he's a DJ and producer as well. So it was like, yeah, okay, we got the project coming up, Double Cup. I say, Rashad, yeah, I got you. Whatever you need. Alley-oop, slam dunk, let's do it. So that's why we got so many collaborations like that on Double Cup, because it was like, bro was touring and stuff like that, and he ain't have a lot of time on his hands. So it's like, yeah, I got a couple projects that I've been working on. Let's just piece these together and finish your album.
Was that intended to, I mean, that's a DJ Rashad record, but it feels like a
Tech Life.
Yeah, exactly.
Collaboration.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I mean, that was just the goal. We got to push each other. You know, it was never all about one person. We was on that masterpiece stuff, you know, that No Limit stuff. Like, I'm going to feature on your album, you're going to feature on my album, he going to feature on my album, you know, like,
yeah.
And keep the flow going.
How does that record change y'all's lives after that? Because to me, and correct me if I'm wrong, I feel like that had a giant splash even outside of traditional listeners. In some ways, I'm not going to say that it's a crossover record,
right?
But it certainly goes a long way.
It's foundational.
Yeah,
yeah.
Into so many different communities who might not even be, you know,
hip
to juke, to footwork, to any of this.
Right. Yeah, basically just us solidifying the stance that we was on. Like, yeah, we make different shit. We make weird shit. But this is our shit. This is Chicago shit.
Mm.
So at the end of the day, we wanted to put that Chicago stamp behind our music. Like, I don't care what nobody's saying, Chicago, we did this for y'all. You know, we out here. We in London. We in the UK. We out here in Europe. Like, yo, really a cry to Chicago to listen to what the fuck we got going on, because everybody else was getting it. But Chicago was, you know, that's why the album cover had the Chicago skyline.
Chicago be fuck. It's just like so Chicago.
We're slow. You know? We're slow to really embrace and recognize our own a lot of times.
Sometimes we do too much and we leave everything else that's not that.
But do you think that, I mean, because I feel like when that album dropped, I remember it being everywhere, I don't know if that was your experience, but as a listener, as a fan, that was something that I feel like, I'm like, oh wow, they fucking did it on this record.
Yeah, you know? And it got out here organically, you know. Of course we got the marketing and stuff like that from Hyperdub, but like, a lot of people just mess with what we doing organically, because when we was on tour, we'd hang out with people. We'd take our time after a set, just hang out with the kids, you know what I mean? Like, it didn't matter. Like, you grown, let's have a drink. A smoke. you know what I mean?
True.
Like, so a lot of people like endear us for that. Like, that's why people love Rashad so much. Like, we was them dudes. We wouldn't just leave a show and just leave. We like wanted to know why you like our music. We were curious. We were curious because we was like the test subject. We was the ambassadors of this shit. So it's like, yeah, we wanna know and we wanna hang out. And like, if you fuck with us, we fuck with you.
Right.
Well, Rashad passed away that year.
Yep, 2014, April.
Yeah.
It's like crazy.
I mean, what's it been like since then?
It's been hard. I can't front to you. You know, a lot of weight been put on me. And I had to endure it, you know? Like, I started having kids. Like, bro passed, and I had my first kid.
Named so Rashad, right?
Yes, sir. That's my son, little Rashad. Wow. That's my G.
Wow.
Because Rashad's son, shout out Chad, my G, young Chad. That's Rashad's son. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So Rashad, they named his son after him. So it's like a no-brainer. Like, that's Rashad, G. Like, he got to stay alive. And, like, that's how we kept it going. Like, for real, for real, for real. And it's melancholy because I had, like, a lot of shows. And, like, I had to call up the homies for help. And Tasso was the only person that could really facilitate at the time. He was actually overseas when Rashad passed, and he had to come back home. And then we put together these tours that was already in place. But like, I'm like, man, I can't go by myself, you know. And a few of the other guys could go, like they already had obligations and stuff like that. So Tasso, you know what I'm saying, my dude, I love you, bro. He stepped up and came out, and like we did the rest of the shows that we had for 2014 together.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like since then, like, you know, we're running out of time, but this summer has been really powerful, I think, for Tech Life. I mean, I'm a newbie, but I still feel powerful.
No, but damn, yeah. I mean, this, y'all are kind of everywhere this summer.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I had to plant my feet. Like, I had a real bad break-in at the studio last year, so it's like it grounded me. For sure. So I had to sit down. And with me sitting down, I had to reevaluate my career. Like, it was cool, like, working with agencies and they give me bookings. But, like, the essence of what we do is from us creating a space for people to dance and listen to our music. So, like, that's what I've been on all 2018, figuring out how we could be more prominent in Chicago and in the Midwest where it's needed. You know, like, I love the world. But the world got to understand that where we from, it ain't all good. Mm. And we the only people that could make this change.
So what is, that new direction, I guess, or that, you know, I don't know if revigoration is a word. Reinvigoration is,
That's proper.
That's proper to something.
We need a reinvigoration out here.
But y'all doing it.
Yeah.
Y'all doing the work.
It's cool. Like, really, I just want to get Chicago back in tune. So we linked up with a few of our partners out here in Chicago. We got Juggernaut. We got a show coming up for my EP release, October. We're doing a collab together. React Presents.
Talk about the EP, though.
Oh, the EP?
Yeah. What's it called?
Man, I'm still working on it.
But you told me something.
Yeah, old to me, new to you.
Yeah.
That's the concept, but it could turn into a true story. Just simple. But basically.
Don't make me incorrect.
four to five tracks of mine, you know, due to wax space, you know, I got to do four tracks. But then probably a bonus track for digital download. But man, just basically, it's a few tracks describing my life for the last 4 years.
Well, and the last time you put something out was in 2015.
Yeah.
Oh, but you put out that Opioids.
Yes. Well, and also work with Chance and Jeremiah on the Christmas shit.
You know,
like, I'll always keep working.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. And I think those little things kind of get overlooked if it's not a project by us, Tech Life and myself. But like, yeah, man, I did remix for Snoop and Dame Funk, G-Eazy.
Damn.
A lot of people, man, like, I've been working hard too. Like, shouts out to my manager, Wes Harden. Like, he plugged me with a lot of nice plugs, you know, over these last 4 years. So, just been building Kalela, Danny Brown.
Right. Yeah.
You know, I just like to deal with organics. Like, if I fuck with your shit and I could remix it, then that's like the positive. Like, I don't really care to remix somebody's music that I don't feel. Like, whoever I touch, Kanye, like, that's my G. I love fam. Like, he's Chicago. Like, no matter how crazy, I love fucking his music. So I'm going to fucking touch that shit every time because I feel it's all right to do it.
Right. Yeah. Chicago needs you, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely. Where the album comes out, the EP comes out when?
Hopefully. End of October, early November.
And you say you're going to have a release with Juggernaut.
Yeah. We're going to have a release party. So, yeah.
Is that date solidified?
October 25th at Reggie's.
Okay.
True.
Yeah.
Great. I obviously there's so much. And really, I mean, Tara is talking about.
We could come back on the show.
Yeah. I mean, you should feel free to come. I mean, also, we want to have, like, you know, we want this to be a space for the tech life, you know.
I mean, you bring
family.
All of them.
Y'all,
you know,
yeah,
for real, we would love to have them on. And anytime you have something, please come through, because we would love to continue to, you know, to not only have you on the show, but just have folks, you know, be continuously aware in the city and beyond about the impact and the work that you do. You really are a Chicago legend.
Mm-hmm.
Who's so young, you know what I mean? Which is an incredible thing to say about such a young person, but your impact on the culture is profound, and will have impact, you know, ripples in this city for generations.
They'll figure it out 20 years from now.
Well, but that's,
I mean,
on
we
us
keep
that's
talking
on us
about it,
and that's on us to make sure that it isn't 20 years from now or later. And so, you know, we want to support and help in any way we can to make sure the folks know. So salutes to you, man.
Yeah,
appreciate
thank you.
Y'all. Salute y'all. Yeah,
now, where can people find you on the Interconnected Network?
Man, DJ Spin with two N's, Tech Life Connected. It's just like that. TechLife57.com. We out here. Just look for Tech Life, and you're going to find me. You're going to find all the other guys. You know, like, it ain't all about me. So, like, I don't like bigging up myself. It's all about Tech Life. This the brand. It's the dream. This is everything right here. This is DJ Rashad. This is the whole everything. What we do this for is Tech Life.
And we spell Tech Life so the folks know to where
TEKLIFE 57.com.
Thank you, man.
Thank you.
Yeah, appreciate you. And again, yo, salutes to our IRL actual factual sponsor, Stolen Spirits.
Yeah, shout out y'all.
They're gonna give you this bottle of rum. I hope you enjoy it. Let us know what you think of it.
Oh yeah,
and do it with some coconut coconuts.
Exactly. And yeah, man. Anytime you're welcome back.
Man,
in the corner
thank
store.
You.
Thank
you
bro.
So much.
Appreciate
rolling
you.
Off that stolen baby.
Yo, we want to thank DJ Exist for the beat.
Langston Olsen for the art.
Big ups, Todd Manley at WGN Radio.
And Max and Dami, the corner store interns.
Salutes to our super producer, DJ Cash Era.
You can keep in tune with the corner store at cornerstore_pod on Instagram, Twitter, and SoundCloud.
Also, you can stream and download the corner store wherever you listen to podcasts.
And please rate and subscribe and comment on iTunes.
Please, y'all, consider giving us those 5 stars.
Thank you for listening.
We're going to see you next week.
The Corner Store is brought to you by Stolen Spirits.